The following pre-recorded program is sponsored by Tabes Tech, LLC. This is Pro Business Colorado with your host, Dave Tabor, on News Talk 710 KNUS.
Welcome to Pro Business Colorado with Dave Tabor on 710 KNUS. Pro Business Colorado with Dave Tabor is a show about spirit, the spirit of opportunity created by people who could be successful anywhere and choose to start and grow businesses here in Colorado. Whether it's having a business meeting during a bike ride or the special kind of collaboration that goes on here, I get jazzed talking with dynamic people with interesting businesses and with subject matter experts who get that Colorado is special. All my guests are people who love Colorado. They inspire me, and they can inspire you to do business well and offer ideas to help us succeed in business as we go through our career. So today, I'm speaking with Ed Seelever of the Denver Business Journal, whose beat includes tourism and hospitality. Ed, it's always great to have you with me. Thanks.
Thanks for having me back on, Dave.
And because your beat is hospitality, I'm joined today by two hospitality entrepreneurs, Paul Laurie of Smithsonian Student Adventures, Walking Tree Travel, Invisible City, and Silver Spork Special. Those are all woven together. I'm glad you're with me, Paul. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
And also Sean Smiley of State 38 Distillery. It's a great Colorado company. I'm glad you're here with us as well.
Thanks, David. Appreciate it.
So we're going to be talking about creating customer experiences and the trends around all of that in the hospitality industry. And, of course, what you can learn from and apply from those examples in your own businesses. Be sure to check out the Pro Business Colorado podcast, today's show and past shows featuring leaders of great companies like Otterbox, Zeal Optics, Full Contact, PharmaJet, American Furniture Warehouse. They're all going to be available with this show via podcast starting Monday. You can find that on my website at proco360.com. Again, that's proco360.com. So let's start today's show with a conversation with Ed Seelever. Again, welcome, Ed. I'm glad you're back.
Hey, thanks for having me. It's fun.
Yes. So, and at the end of the show, stick around. Ed and I are going to be talking, as we always do, about some of the news in Colorado that affects businesses like yours. So stick around for that. But first, as I mentioned, Ed, in the intro, I want to try to do something today. It's going to be a little hard because I'd be happy spending our whole time talking with these guys about their businesses. And instead, I want to weave in sort of this theme developing experiences for customers and then marketing those experiences. And as you look at restaurants, your beat, tourist attractions, bars and the like, they're growing, they're changing and so forth. But are you seeing this notion of customer experience differently through your lens as a reporter in that arena?
Well, it's actually almost become cliched at this point, especially when covering the hotel industry, to talk about how hotels are changing because millennial travelers particularly want experiences, not rooms at this point. That's why hotel rooms are shrinking. Hotel brands are kind of backing off of the picture a little bit. And even though branding is still popular, you see more soft branding, meaning basically you have a company that you can get a lot of points at if you travel to their hotels. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But each of their hotels is different because they want to reflect the local atmosphere. I've been talking to a number of people who are opening hotels in Denver this year who all say, you know, we're going to have concierges who know the local area, yeah, who can send you to the hippest places. And this is what people are going to pay good money for these days, not staying in a big, gaudy place.
So do you think that's different in Colorado and that this notion of experience, is that something that's special here, or is this a national trend?
I think it's a national trend, but I think Colorado is a flashpoint for it because people come here for the experience. Colorado is unlike any other place. It's the number one winter destination in the country. We get more of the mm-hmm. snow sports crowd as a percentage than any state in the union. And so people want to come and see what Colorado has. That usually actually means getting outside and seeing it. And so, yeah, the experience has to be first and foremost there.
So one of the things that I want to talk about in depth is this notion of creating experiences. And one news story that caught my attention was the idea that the NHL, Major League Hockey, just hired a new head of marketing who comes from Pandora and Fox Interactive. And so I'm wondering, you know, what do you think that says about how the entertainment industry views growth and views sort of the interaction with their customer base?
Well, I think if you look at the ratings of any of the major sports, they've been declining in recent years because people don't want to just sit and watch things anymore. They want to be more a part of it. Now, of course, that's partially because there's so many more options of what to do out there than to sit in front of a TV or sit, you know, pay $40 to sit in the stands. But I think it also talks to the changing needs of a society that don't want to just be passive observers anymore. They want to somehow be part of the action, which is how you come up with, you know, great tour companies and great local beverage companies.
Yeah, and if you guys want to weigh in anytime, jump in. This notion of creating experiences for customers, and Ed, as you go out and you're covering stories, and you're covering mostly the successful operators in the hospitality industry, right? I mean, you don't.
I'm covering a number of restaurants that aren't doing well right now, but yes, largely I cover more successes than not.
Okay, so let me ask you, just put you on the spot. When you're covering restaurants as well that aren't doing as well as the new one, does this notion of experience tie in to success and failure as you would evaluate it?
I don't know that experience is something that chains that are struggling cite, but maybe lack of originality and lack of draw, lack of reason for customers keep coming back. In fact, that's the big new thing, not even the new thing, but the big area that a lot of chains talk about is the ability to get customers back 2, 3, 4, 5 times a month. Mm-hmm. This is key, not just bringing in people who want to see this once. And so in that way, I guess you really are creating an experience because you have to bring people back.
Yeah, Sean Smiley of Steak 38, jump in.
Yeah, my wife and I talk about this quite a bit. So we honestly believe that customer service has really taken a decline, and that has also contributed to the lack of people wanting to come back. We'll take a restaurant that has mediocre food. If the experience from the waiter or waitress and the staff there is top-notch. So we try to bring that into the distillery. Now, I'm not saying we have mediocre spirits at Steak 38, but we can add on to it and further exemplify the experience by making sure that we shake people's hands when they walk in the door. We ask them how they've been. We ask them what they enjoyed with the tour, what they enjoyed with the products that we taste them on. And when they leave the shop, they're quick to get on social media and share their positive experience with us. It's not just walk in the door, hey, this is what we do, and then push them out as quick as possible. We really try to embrace them and hug them and make them feel like they're part of our brand.
And Sean, let me ask, how many distilleries are there in the state of Colorado right now?
73 licensed distilleries.
Mm. Okay, so you got 73 licensed distilleries. You got pushing over 300, between 300 and 350 breweries. You've got wineries that are, and I don't know the number off the top of my head, but I think are around 100 right now. And so really, people can find good liquor, spirits, beer, wine, anywhere here in the state. I mean, I guess that has to be a differentiator for you.
It is, yeah. And, I think 5 years ago, it was 1% of the total market. But now we're actually making a dent, which is great.
Okay, the conversation's heating up, and now I need to take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk about this whole notion of building a customer experience. And I want to challenge you guys to think about it. If you were cleaning carpets or if you were servicing cars, how would you do it differently? This is Pro Business Colorado with Dave Tabor. We'll be back after this.
News Talk 710, KNUS.
Hi, this is Dave Tabor for American Furniture Warehouse. I'm a big fan of AFW. I'm a fan because I've gotten to know them well, really well. Jake has built AFW to be a company all of us in Colorado can be proud of. He started it by buying out a dying little store and turned it into Colorado's largest family-owned company with thousands of employees and tens of thousands of customers. And guess what? He's done it the old-fashioned way, by treating customers and employees right. I've seen how Jake operates. Once, when a worker slipped in a wet shipping bay, Jake invested hundreds of thousands of dollars to install better weatherproofing collars around all the shipping doors so it wouldn't happen again. AFW has its own physical therapy center so that workers can stay healthy, and if someone does get hurt, he or she can be treated immediately by qualified professionals. AFW drivers are incentivized to deliver furniture on time and without damage, and when they do, they earn a lot more than typical drivers. All that and great products at low prices. AFW runs a tremendous business we can all be proud of. I hope you'll shop there as I do.
At the Colorado Association of Commerce and Industry, we're committed to Colorado. We believe that Colorado should be the place where forward-thinking business leaders choose to invest, innovate, and grow their businesses. And we champion for a positive business climate to drive prosperity for all those who want to work to achieve it. If you believe as we do and want to work side by side to help Colorado thrive, join us. We're the State Chamber of Commerce. Visit cochamber.com.
Blinds are one of those things I thought I'd never buy online, but that was before I found Blinds.com. The prices, selection, and quality are amazing. Shipping is free, and their professional designers gave me a free online design consultation, helping me pick, measure, and install the perfect blinds for every room.
Winter is still hanging on, so let's jumpstart spring with some savings. Now through March 14th, get up to 30% off site-wide at Blinds.com. Just use promo code SHUTTERS. That's Blinds.com, promo code SHUTTERS. Rules and restrictions apply.
Now, back to Pro Business Colorado with Dave Tabor on News Talk 710 KNUS.
Welcome back to Pro Business Colorado with Dave Tabor on 710 KNUS. I'm speaking with Ed Seelever of the Denver Business Journal, also with Paul Laurie of Smithsonian Student Adventures and Silver Sports Special, and with Sean Smiley of State 38 Distillery. We'll continue that conversation around customer experience after I thank our great sponsors and really appreciate Community Banks of Colorado, MicroStar Keg Logistics, and American Furniture Warehouse. Those three companies are all great supporters of the Colorado entrepreneurial community, and I hope you'll support them as well. And we were diving right into this whole notion at the break of what a customer experience is, how you create a differentiated one. And I want to back up a little bit and talk with Paul and with Sean about what your companies are, what they do, and create some perspective around that. They're great companies. Paul, why don't you start with a couple of companies that you're running?
Yeah, totally. So Smithsonian Student Adventures is a student travel organization that focuses on taking high school students on community service, language immersion, and adventure travel programs abroad, mostly during their summers. I also run a supper club called Silver Spork Social, or Special, that's fun too.
Mm-hmm. Oh, thank you. No problem. It is special, but yeah.
It is special, which sort of takes adults on a similar type of journey, except for here in Denver in the culinary scene and involving new chefs, new bartenders, new musicians, and really pairing them to have an experimental evening.
What's an give an example of an experimental evening? Can't leave that just hanging.
Yeah, for sure. So basically, it'd be a triple pairing. So we would have a 5 to 10 course meal where a chef and bartender would make up their own menu, and then they would send that to a jazz quartet, let's say, for example, and would have the jazz quartet pair each course with music. So the night is really framed in mystery. So people don't know where they're going. They basically go to some website that has no information on it. They donate money to cyberspace.
Ha.
It's not an online scam, thank God.
Yeah.
and then they end up at the tattered cover bookstore in the magazine section. They wait for someone with a top hat to come and then take them away to the destination for the night. So it's sort of the whole idea is that we're gathering people that have this sense of adventure that really want to explore the unknown and give them a space to really get to know each other and create community around that.
You know what comes to mind as you explain that? I'm at the State Chamber of Commerce as an executive there, and of course, my views are not always their views, so they're with that disclaimer. But we have a program where we create experiences for participants, and our rule of thumb is if someone's not going to brag about it the next day to their friends who weren't part of it, then we don't want to do it. And it sounds like you're kind of along that line too.
It's a little bit. This last dinner we had this last weekend, we actually didn't allow any cell phones in the place. So it really is just about you participating in the moment, you know, where you are. So I think for us, the idea of experience is really participation. It's not about having a client come to you. It's about having them feel like they're part of something.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, even pulling back, you know, the curtain a little bit and showing them behind the scenes. So the chef is always out there cooking in the space with them. The bartenders are out there having drinks with them. Musicians are going around really having a lot of fun. So the people that are both working, you know, as the back end staff and the participants are really in it together.
And if somebody wants to be part of Silver Spork Social, you can't just go sign up, right? That's intriguing as well.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's mostly because what we're trying to do is gather this community of people that are similarly minded, right? So they want this sense of adventure. So it's a referral based system. It's also for legal reasons, it's a private supper club. So you have to be referred into it as sort of a membership base. But you know, I let pretty much anyone that wants to come. I want more people from different diverse backgrounds to come to these dinners and really enjoy and appreciate each other.
That's kind of interesting. A couple of weeks ago, I had Toma Bedoya, who's the CEO of House of Genius. This is kind of a different flavor, but the idea of this is a great Colorado company that brings together people who don't know each other from all different backgrounds and to see what kinds of creative ideas come out of that. And that kind of experience seems to do well here in Colorado.
Yeah, I mean, I think Denver and Colorado in general is sort of the Wild West still, right? It really embraces and supports these new ideas and these new sort of experiences from, you know, big festivals during the day to supper clubs like mine. It's been a lot of fun to do.
Do you think, as you run your business, because this is ultimately a business, right?
So this is more of a hobby for me.
Oh.
So it does bring in some revenue, but for me, if I thought of it as a business, it wouldn't be as successful as I'd like it to be. So if I think of it as a hobby, it's a very successful hobby.
Well, what's your take as a reporter to hear a guy who's started something sort of novel that's getting traction, doing really well, who says, I don't want to think of it as a business. Are you seeing that out in your beat?
I don't know that I'm seeing it as specific businesses so much, but you see that with breweries, with restaurants, breweries especially, that say, hey, I'm going to make this IPA, this amber ale, and I'm going to sell a lot of it. And by the way, I'm going to barrel age this double imperial stout, throw in some chicory and caramel, let it age. And, you know, they're never going to make the money off of that, but that's what they're really going to have fun mm-hmm. with, while their core products are the ones that are more successful.
Sean Smiley, State 38 Distillery, I'm going to ask you to tell us what you do. But first I wanted to ask you, is this notion of, you make spirits. Do you pick some to have just fun with and others to make money on?
Yeah, actually, I can relate quite a bit. The distillery also started off as more of a hobby than a business. In fact, I still maintain a full-time job now while having staff basically run the distillery. And we experiment all the time, right? Right now we're doing rye whiskeys and wheat whiskeys and making it fun. I feel like I agree that if I turn my thought process that we have to make a buck off of this, then I'm going to be less focused on the experimental fun side of the business and more focused on, okay, this is just the core market that I'm going to serve, and I'm just going to make a bland product that I know is going to get a lot of revenue for these folks. We make a Scottish peat smoked whiskey in Colorado, right? Mm. We make tequila, in quotes, yeah. in Colorado. So we're having fun, and these are things that aren't necessarily big margin plays for us because raw materials are very expensive, but we're having a great time doing it.
Well, give us a quick background of State 38 Distillery.
Yeah, so I'll start off by saying Colorado is a 38 state. So that's probably the number one question we get asked when people walk
what
in.
Is that
what
mean?
Is State 38? Yeah. yeah. So Colorado native, I wanted to show my love for the state of Colorado, and I picked the year 1876 as the branding for my distillery, which is when we became State 38. We are based out of Golden, Colorado, which is a beautiful town to be based in, great community. And started off making all agave-based spirits. And again, I can't legally call our products tequila on the label mm-hmm. because Mexico owns the trade name tequila, much like champagne
be
called champagne if it's made in a certain region of France. But I can still use the age naming conventions like Blanco, Reposado, and Añejo on my bottles. So started off making agave spirits about 2 years ago, decided that I would start making some grain-based spirits, which are some whiskeys. And we just released our first bourbon and our Scottish peat smoked whiskey recently. But it's going great. We're having a really good time. We just got into bourbon country, so we're now sold in Tennessee, which is kind of fun.
Congratulations.
If
you've just joined us, this is Pro Business Colorado with Dave Tabor. The voice you heard was Sean Smiley of State 38 Distillery. I'm also speaking with my friend Ed Seelover of the Denver Business Journal and with Paul Laurie of Smithsonian Student Adventures and Silver Spork Social. So I'm glad, Sean, that we were talking about the notion that you still have a job while you're doing this, because I think in the next segment, as a bit of a teaser, I want to talk about that notion of how do you do one and the other together. While we're still in this segment, I want to talk some more. I want to talk some more with Paul of Smithsonian Student Adventures, and then tie that notion of experience. Smithsonian Student Adventures, you're taking high school kids right around the world to have these experiences. And I watched one of the videos marketing that one of the key benefits you sell is the ability for students to come home and brag about all the things they've done with their peers, right? How does that notion of experiences that you can share, or that you want to share, how does that weave into how you build your business?
Yeah, for us, Smithsonian Student Adventures and both that and Silver Spork Social are purely about the experience, right? We're not selling widgets. We're selling a feeling. We're selling an experience abroad or an experience here in Denver. For us, our students are coming on these trips for many reasons. One of the side benefits is that, when they come back, they do have a lot of new material to share with their friends in stories or anything else, but also it helps with their college resumes. And it really, our main goal with that is to cultural engagement, right? To have them go abroad, get to know a new culture in a way that they might not do on a family vacation or something else, and then come back and really have a different trajectory. So they're more interested in global affairs, more interested in learning about the world, other languages, things like that.
Is that I would think a company like yours might be formed on a coast versus Colorado. How did this happen?
Yeah, so basically I graduated from college. I hit the road traveling and trying out different jobs. I was living in New York off and on for the last 10 years after college. And throughout my travels, I was realizing that there weren't that many other Americans traveling. And if they were, they might not be doing it in the way that I was seeing. I think there was some statistic that around 90% of Americans don't have a passport. And so two of my friends, I went to East High School here in Denver. I'm not quite a Denver native. I was born in Texas. Don't tell anyone other than your radio guests.
Yeah, that's right.
But moved here when I was three. And the three of us had really been on the road full time. And we wanted to figure out a way to really influence more Americans to travel abroad and do it in a different light. We also all wanted to start our own businesses of some sort, and we wanted to keep traveling. Hmm. So this really did was born out of a love of travel and passion for that. And so our first trip was here in Colorado. We took 12 students from area high schools abroad. I'm not sure why those parents let us take them. Yeah. We were 24 years old, never done it before, but that was great. And this is 10 years later, and we just recently sort of closed on a partnership with the Smithsonian. So our original name was Walking Tree Travel. After 10 years, that's still around for middle school, elementary school mm-hmm. adults. But our core business of high school travel is now called Smithsonian Student Adventures.
What a badge of honor, really, to be recognized by Smithsonian and have a Colorado company do. You know, one thing that crossed my mind as you were telling that story, and by the way, the person I'm speaking with right now is Paul Laurie of Smithsonian Student Adventures on Pro Business Colorado with Dave Tabor, also joined with by Ed Sealover of the Denver Business Journal and by Sean Smiley of State 38 Distillery. This show, this podcast, will be available at proco360.com. And I want to mention, when you were talking about, I don't know why those parents let you take, I think one of the biggest success points for an entrepreneur is the point where they just say, I'm going to make this happen. Right. Mm-hmm. I mean, you must have something in your mind must have said, we can make, you know, I can take these kids across the world and bring them home alive. Right.
Yeah. I mean, I think the main point there is that, you know, we knew we could provide a very safe experience for these students and very meaningful.
How did you know you could provide a safe experience? You three had just gone places. I mean,
yeah. So we had all lived in Costa Rica at various times, and the particular community we were going to, we were very much embedded mm-hmm, in already. Mm-hmm. This was not kind of throw a dart at the map and see where we went.
Yeah.
It was very intentional. So I think that first year, although we didn't have the direct experience, and some of my partners did, mm-hmm. Leading groups, we knew we had the experience with the community and the familiarity there. And since our programs are about cultural engagement, that was the most important piece to us, is how can we make sure this is a very welcoming, comforting environment for these students to really foster.
You know, one thought that I've had is so often when people start a business, they dwell on things like logo and business cards and taglines and all this kind of stuff, when really, really what it takes to start a business is a customer, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, you had a basis of understanding in Costa Rica, you found 12 kids to go, and I would dare say, maybe you'll tell me I'm wrong, but your business started after you had 12 kids ready to go.
Oh, yeah, definitely. You know, for us, that participation angle is really key. So as you were saying before, you know, what really ties in the Silver Spork experience with the Smithsonian experience is that, and I was thinking about this before, is what kind of helps that be a cohesive unit, my day job and my night hobby job. And that really is the idea of exploration, right? We're trying to get more and more people out there pushing their comfort zones by day as a student in a very safe way abroad. And then at night also pushing, you know, our comfort zones here in our local community of what people expect out of nightlife, what they expect out of restaurants, what they can expect out of the person sitting next to them. And for us, that's been really fun because it sort of tied it all into me mm-hmm. as why I do both of those things.
Yeah, and you label yourself on your LinkedIn website as a curator of experiences. So I think that works well. When we come back, this is what I'd like to do. I want to finish this conversation around starting a business and experiences and so forth. But then what I want to challenge both of you to do is come up with, if you were injecting experiences into businesses that don't generally have them, how would you go about doing it? Let's see what we can learn together about that. This is Pro Business Colorado with Dave Tabor. Go to proco360.com for this podcast. Again, proco360.com. We'll be back after this.
CBS News Update. The White House is demanding a congressional investigation into whether former President Obama abused executive powers in connection with the 2016 election. Florida Republican Senator Marco Rubio of the Intelligence Committee on CNN's State of the Union today asked about President Trump's claims that Mr. Obama wiretapped Trump Tower.
I'm not sure what it is he is talking about. Perhaps the president has information that is not yet available to us or to the public. And if it's true, obviously we're going to find out very quickly. And if it isn't, then obviously he'll have to explain what he meant by it.
CBS political analyst Leonard Steinhorn.
It's incumbent upon the President of the United States, when he says something, to have evidence to back it up. That is the minimum that the American people should expect out of the White House.
CBS News consultant Ron Hosko is a former assistant director of the FBI.
The notion that a president could order collection where the predication doesn't exist it would be scandalous.
CBS News Update, I'm Gary Nunn.
710 KNUS invites you to celebrate St. Patrick's Day with Peter Boyles and the crew from 710 at our Boyles Blarney Blowout. Get your green on and come shake your shamrock on Thursday night, March 16th at the Proof Nightclub in Denver. Admission includes a great Irish buffet, including corned beef and cabbage, Irish stew, and more. For tickets and complete details, go to 710KNUS.com.
Hearing aid users are younger and more active than ever before, and the reason may surprise you. Today's hearing aids have become so advanced, they're almost effortless. How effortless? You only change the batteries once a year, not every week. And you never open the battery compartment, even at night. How effortless? You can adjust how loudly and how much background noise you want to hear, right from your phone. And the clarity. Independent studies show that our hearing aids help you to hear better in background noise than people with perfect hearing, automatically. I'm Dr. Barbara Jenkins from Advanced Audiology. For more information about these and other advancements that improve clarity and ease of use, go to advancedaudiology.com or call 303-649-2122. If you have a hearing loss, you know how important these features can be. That's 303-649-2122. At Advanced Audiology, we take your hearing seriously.
Are you embarrassed by your smile? Are you unable to eat the foods you love, afraid to laugh, afraid to live a normal life, even afraid to go out in public? Dr. Barrett's with Barrett's Dental here. I believe that you deserve a smile that you can be proud of so you can live your life the way you want, with the peace of mind that you can smile without embarrassment and that your mouth is healthy. At Barrett's Dental, we want to help you get your life back. I invite you to my office for a free consultation where you can find out for yourself if you are comfortable at Barrett's Dental. We offer total dental solutions, meaning we can handle all of your dental care in one convenient location without referring you all over town. If you feel safe at Barrett's Dental, it's the last place you'll need to visit to get the care you need. Is the condition of your mouth causing you to live a life of quiet desperation? Call me. I'll take great care of you.
If you're looking for a safe place to take care of all your dental needs, call Barrett's Dental at 303-502-5527. Or visit denverdentist.com.
The Brad Jenkins Show, making sense of making money.
Yes, investing in this market can be confusing, but it doesn't have to be. At Jenkins Wealth, one of our favorite words is simple. We want to help you understand how your money's invested. I always say, an informed investor is an empowered investor. So join us every weekend as we make sense of making money.
Join us Sunday afternoons at 1 o'clock for the Brad Jenkins Show, making sense of making money on 710 KNUS.
We now return to Pro Business Colorado with Dave Tabor on News Talk 710 KNUS.
Welcome back to Pro Business Colorado with Dave Tabor. Glad you're joining us. I've been speaking with Ed Seelever of the Denver Business Journal, whose beat includes tourism and hospitality, and we're joined by hospitality entrepreneurs Sean Smiley of State 38 Distillery and Paul Laurie of Smithsonian Student Adventures and Silver Spork Social. And we've been talking about this whole notion of creating experiences for customers and how that drives business. And as we continue that, first I want to thank our great sponsors, MicroStar Keg Logistics, American Furniture Warehouse, and Community Banks of Colorado. All three of those companies are great. To me, they're great Colorado companies because they support this whole notion that Colorado should be a great place for entrepreneurs. And so I appreciate their support quite a bit. Again, Pro Business Colorado with Dave Tabor is a show about entrepreneurs and experts who could be successful anywhere and choose to start and grow their businesses here in Colorado. So let's get back to this conversation around experiences. And what I want to ask our entrepreneurs, and Ed, jump into if you'd like. We talked about, you know, creating experiences in travel or in tasting with distilled beverages and things like that, right? Those kinds of experiences, those are – now, if you were going to take what you were doing and apply that to, say, a carpet cleaning company or an automotive repair business, what's your sense about experience and applying those same lessons for someone else who might have a different kind of company?
Yeah, I'll start off by saying, you know, I'm going to go back to alcohol, but it's different from distilling. You guys remember when Coors Brewery used to have a really cool tour, and you could actually, you know, walk the floor, and it was very interactive. Now it's become, you know, more of a herding cattle through type of experience with plastic windows, you know, blocking you from being able to really interact with the brewery. And I think that one of the things that's caused a big spur in the craft brewing, distilling, and other industries of craft is the breaking down of those walls that separate what makes your business work and the people that come and give money to your business, your customer base, right? And that distance, the more distance you have between, you know, what it is that you're doing and your customer base, and those plastic walls that you put between those folks, I think you're less likely to be successful. And so what we're doing, and I think a lot of the craft industry, and it sounds like even Paul with his travel businesses, is really injecting the customer directly in and showing, hey, these are our chefs. These are our musicians. Hmm. Hey, this is my distillery, and these are my staff. This is how we mill grains. You want to help us bottle? Yeah. Then get involved.
That's very interesting, and I think it does become challenging for larger companies. Although, to Coors' credit, I was there last week, and I tasted a delicious oak-aged a beer that they had made in their tasting room, and that was pretty interesting. I'm like, wow, you guys, you know, but I think it speaks to what you're talking about, that you know, customers want more individualized kinds of experiences. And Paul, you wanted to add to that too.
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the main things too is to do all the extras around your core business, right? So even if you're a carpet cleaner, you could actually, you know, the mint on the pillow per se, right? For, you know, Smithsonian Student Adventures, one thing that we do is we give all of our students and teachers a global leadership curriculum to do for free before, during, and then after their travels. So to really continue that customer from just like that experience from one trip to something beyond that and really staying engaged is important for us. Hmm. You know, so I don't know what it'd be for a carpet cleaner, but it could be that I bought a toothbrush the other week, and when I opened the toothbrush bag, it came in the mail, the scent of mint came out of the bag. It was very subtle, but it really did make an impact on me, and I obviously am talking about it today. So
yeah,
it's all those little extras around what you actually have.
So it sounds like what you're really doing is you're challenging people to, if that's the metaphor, you know, whether it's carpet cleaner or car repair, what do you do to make something feel different than something?
Yeah. And if, I mean, look, let's be honest, if you're washing carpets for $10 a room and you want to get in and out as quick as possible, then the customer experience aspect of that may not be what your branding is focused on. But if mm-hmm. you are a carpet cleaning service and you want to Paul's point, right, you want to go the extra mile and you want to explain why you're doing what you're doing with those carpets, why you're using that particular conditioner or soap, et cetera, mm-hmm. I think then that customer remembers that and wants to be part of that experience and feels a connection with the company and with the experience that took place. But that's not for everyone, right? There's definitely the fast food service type carpet cleaners or other businesses out there that, you know, look, hey, I'm busy. I need to be in a meeting in 10 minutes. Can you just clean my room? You know, I don't want to hear about what soap you're using and yeah. why you're going counterclockwise versus clockwise on the scrubbing. So it just depends on the, you know, the type.
You know, my favorite clip is 60. Will you play 63 from Simon Sinek?
People don't buy what you do. They buy why you do it. And what you do simply proves what you believe. In fact, people will do the things that prove what they believe.
And so this notion of why, you just use it really in an interesting way where a carpet cleaner could go into someone's house and say, this is why I'm using this. This is why I'm doing it. Do you think that creates inherently that kind of high touch experience?
Without question. Look, I mean, we're also talking about a generation that grew up with television explaining how combs are made, how lawnmowers are made, right? You remember when Discovery Channel was really fun to watch and
showed you,
and it wasn't a reality
TV show.
Show.
There was a whole show of how things are made.
Right. And that's the generation that's coming up now. People want to know why things work the way they do, and they want to understand why they're paying the money for the product or service that they're paying. Why am I paying 20% more for this service versus the other business that can do it for 20% less and be out in 10 minutes? That's part of the why, and I think that's mm-hmm. really important as part of the experience.
Well, part of the why has to do with explanation, and part of it has to do with sort of a deeper sense of why. You know, here's why I'm a carpet cleaner. Here's why I'm in the business. And that tends to create a different kind of customer engagement as well.
Yeah, now you start tugging on heartstrings at that point, right? You can start going into stories of your background, et cetera. And certainly as an entrepreneur, if you have an interesting background, interesting story, you should play on that. You mm-hmm. shouldn't hesitate to bring up, hey, I got into this business because mm-hmm. I found it to be fascinating and I wanted to leave my mundane day job. And this is what I want to do. And people can relate to that and say, well, you know what? I get that. And now I want to be part of this person's brand.
You know, that's a really well put. And if you've just joined us, the voice you just heard is Sean Smiley of State 38 Distillery. I'm also speaking with Paul Laurie, who was leaning towards the mic as I interrupted. Paul Laurie of Smithsonian Student Adventures and of Silver Spork Social, and also Ed Sealover is with me in the studio from the Denver Business Journal. So speak to that. Paul, you had something on your mind.
Yeah, I was also thinking that the why is very important if something goes wrong in your business, too. So to be able to show a customer and explain to them exactly the reason why something happened, as opposed to just apologizing or moving on, has been very valuable, especially in Smithsonian Student Adventures.
Can you think of an example? Because you've got people's kids out there.
Absolutely.
And so when they don't really want to hear something going wrong, right? So what's a good example?
A simple example is we're trying to integrate a shopping cart currently into our website to make it easier for the payment experience. So if parents are calling saying it's very confusing, we actually bring them on to and ask them to help us test it out, right? So to bring them in and they have some buy-in at that point. So if something's going wrong on the site or it's a frustrating experience, instead of just venting that to us, they really are helping us make it better and improve it. So that's sort of the participation we're talking about, is that it's not just from the on-the-ground experience for the student in the country or a diner at the Silver Spork Socials. It's really about everything around it.
I
was going to say, in creating experiences, I'm wondering, how do you all judge going after two different kinds of crowds? One is, loyalty, which I imagine is very important for you at the distillery, but has got to be important for you getting repeat customers as well, but also reaching out to new people. How do you go about the idea of balancing those and getting that message across?
Yeah, I think it's very difficult. Student travel business is a highly competitive business. It's kind of insane. Even our partners at Smithsonian, we're talking about that the other day, that they had no idea how many companies are out there. So we're a very, very small company. We take under 1,000 students abroad a year. Our competitors take 100,000 to 400,000 students abroad a year. So we are a speck of sand, and we actually like it that way.
Are there some student, like, do you run out of slots? Is there this notion of it's hard to get in here, Smithsonian's exclusive? Is there any sex appeal around that?
Yeah, I mean, for us, we do have our students apply for a program and send us references to get in. The reason for that is also for safety, to make sure that students that are applying really get the mission and are coming for the right reasons.
Mm-hmm.
But, there's definitely a good marketing factor for that. The other benefit is, I think high school students sometimes struggle with self-esteem issues. So to feel like they're accepted into something is a very nice motivational moment for them, right? It's very, very getting the client in the door and that participant in has been the best step, because from there we can usually keep them engaged with local service days, with all these activities after the program.
Well, I'm going to stop you there because we're about to come to a break, and I promised our audience in the last time that I was going to ask Sean to explain how he has a full-time job and State 38 Distillery, and we're going to talk about that when we come back, and then I'm going to shift gears to some conversation with Ed Sealover of the Denver Business Journal about news that is important to you right after this.
News Talk 710, KNUS.
Hi, this is Dave Tabor for American Furniture Warehouse. I'm a big fan of AFW. I'm a fan because I've gotten to know them well, really well. Jake has built AFW to be a company all of us in Colorado can be proud of. He started it by buying out a dying little store and turned it into Colorado's largest family-owned company with thousands of employees and tens of thousands of customers. And guess what? He's done it the old-fashioned way, by treating customers and employees right. I've seen how Jake operates. Once, when a worker slipped in a wet shipping bay, Jake invested hundreds of thousands of dollars to install better weatherproofing collars around all the shipping doors so it wouldn't happen again. AFW has its own physical therapy center so that workers can stay healthy, and if someone does get hurt, he or she can be treated immediately by qualified professionals. AFW drivers are incentivized to deliver furniture on time and without damage, and when they do, they earn a lot more than typical drivers. All that and great products at low prices. AFW runs a tremendous business we can all be proud of. I hope you'll shop there as I do.
At the Colorado Association of Commerce and Industry, we're committed to Colorado. We believe that Colorado should be the place where forward-thinking business leaders choose to invest, innovate, and grow their businesses. And we champion for a positive business climate to drive prosperity for all those who want to work,
to achieve it. If you believe as we do and want to work side by side to help Colorado thrive, join us with the State Chamber of Commerce. Visit cochamber.com.
Hi, Hugh Hewitt here for relieffactor.com. I tell you every single day, and I'm telling you now, relieffactor.com has worked for thousands of people. I take it every morning, as does the Fetching Mrs. Hewitt. Try relieffactor.com. Order the 3-week quick start for only $19.95. It's amazing what it has done for thousands. Watch their testimonials. Put down the over-the-counter. Pick up the blue and green bag. Go today to relieffactor.com. The quick start's only $19.95. Relieffactor.com. Relieffactor.com.
Now, back to Pro Business Colorado with Dave Tabor on News Talk 710, KNUS.
Welcome back to Pro Business Colorado with Dave Tabor on 710 KNUS. I've been speaking this hour with Ed Seelover of the Denver Business Journal. Ed, thanks for being back. You and I always have a good time on the radio together.
Absolutely.
So covering your beat, which is mostly tourism and,
hospitality, healthcare, airlines, state government, yeah, and the beverage industry. And
lots of state government stuff. And now we're in the legislative session. So in a minute, we're going to come and talk about some of the issues that are impacting Colorado business in the news. Also, thanks to Paul Laurie of Smithsonian Student Adventures and of Silver Spork Social. That is a tough one to say fast. And
alliteration is key here.
Yeah, so I'm glad you're here. And then Sean Smiley of State 38 Distillery. And I'm going to come to Sean in just a second. I want to thank, though, American Furniture Warehouse, Community Banks of Colorado, and MicroStar Keg Logistics for supporting this show, the show about entrepreneurs and experts who could be successful anywhere and choose to start and grow their businesses here in Colorado. This is Pro Business Colorado with Dave Tabor, and you can find this show via podcast at proco360.com tomorrow, as well as other shows, great shows with the CEOs of Otterbox, Steel Optics, P2B Investor, and many, many others. Again, that's proco360.com. And I said I teed up this last segment saying that I was going to ask Sean Sean had said he has a full-time job still while you're running a thriving distillery. So talk about that.
Yeah, I think there's two key elements that are really important in this, and it's passion and vision. So if I lost the passion to do this, this distillery, I obviously I think I would fail immediately. Mm-hmm. But more importantly is the vision to know where we're going with it so that I don't always have to have two full-time jobs, right? And that's really important for not just me but and the business, but yeah, for my family
as well.
Does
your employer know that your yeah, vision, your hope is to eventually leave that job and just do this?
They do. They do. And actually just went through an acquisition. So I'm coming up to a deadline regardless, with the business that I run, during the daytime. And so, but again, as long as I have that vision and I can see clearly, hey, this is where it's going to be in 12 months mm-hmm, or 16 mm-hmm, months, then that's what allows me to get up at 4 a.m. and go to bed at, you know, midnight.
Yeah. Because you got two kids at home, you're married, you've got three lives.
And a phenomenal support structure too. Let's give
credit. Yeah.
Let's do I need those kudos. Yeah.
That's right. Yeah. But I mean, it really does that. One of my favorite authors is a guy named Gary Vaynerchuk who talks about work, just plain grind out hard work. And it sounds like you just, if you're going to do both, you better sign up for a tough few years.
No question. You have to grind it out. But again, I want to emphasize and stress, though, you need to also have vision. You have to know what the end is going to look like. Otherwise, you're just spinning in circles and you're like hopping on a school bus without a driver who knows where the school is, right? You're on the bus. Yeah. You're getting driven around town, but you have no destination.
What's yours? What's your vision?
My vision is to grow the business, the distillery, into something that I truly want to hand down generational to my kids and their kids and make that become something that we build a family legacy off of. And I know
Daddy's building a booze business.
That's a grandiose type of mm-hmm, endeavor, but why not? Yeah. Right. I mean, if Jack Daniels and Jim Beam and these other big brands can do that, why can't Sean Smiley do it?
Yeah. Well, Ed, when you're in the craft beer business as part of your beat and you really know it well, are you seeing this kind of passion and drive from people who are living two lives, three lives at once?
Absolutely. Most people who are getting into the craft beer business are doing so with another job on the side, often getting up early in the morning, sounds like Sean is doing here too, brewing before they go to work, going back to the brewery after they come home, and in some cases operating it just on weekends to start and then growing into something bigger. But it's not uncommon. It's just part of the risk element in this, but I will also say that for all the people I know that I talked to 5 years ago that were doing two jobs, including a brewery, most of them are just on a brewery right now.
You know, are they making a living?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. No. In fact, it's not uncommon to hear the statement somewhere like, oh, yes, I got in revenues in the first month what I expected 6 months in. I mean,
wow.
But everyone goes in with very conservative expectations, which I imagine is key to what you guys
really
are doing
as well.
Really? I
would think mostly they go in with grandiose expectations and fall short. That's not the case?
But those are the ones who aren't operating anymore. The ones who are successful are the ones that go in very conservative, and maybe they make a bigger investment in the infrastructure needed to grow the business. But don't expect much, and boom, there it comes to him.
What do they tell you about their mindset as they entered this notion of adding, starting and growing a business to a current job? You know, what kind of communication goes into their family? What kind of thinking goes into their mind? What are you seeing, all three of you guys?
I mean, what I hear, and in my personal very small business where I've written two books while I have two kids at home as well, is you just need understanding. You need to be able to parse out your day so that you know this is the time for my full-time job, this is the time for my passion job, this is the time for my family. And I think if you don't do all three of those, and you guys can tell me if I'm wrong here, that's where you get in trouble and you lose control of all three of them.
Yeah. Go ahead, Paul.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of cut out one of those, so I'm single with no kids, so I might be the only one up here. But yeah, I focus on Silver Spork and Smithsonian Student Ventures pretty much full time.
Yeah, but still with two businesses, you've got to divide your attention as well.
Absolutely, yeah. And I really try to mentally cut it off. So 9 to 5 is absolutely the day job with Smithsonian Student Ventures, and then after that, I can start thinking more about my hobby.
So you really discipline your professional life into buckets.
Yeah, and, you know, my partners in Smithsonian Student Ventures are sort of my family, too. So I talked to them a lot about that before I jumped in full force to Silver Spork.
Yeah, Paul, what kind of conversation did you have with your spouse and with your family around this notion of starting say, I've got a full-time job, and now I'm going to start a distillery, and I'm hardly going to ever see you or talk to you for the foreseeable future.
There's a lot of selling involved. There's internal selling.
Selling might not be a good idea, because there could be buyer's remorse down the road, and you pay for that.
Yeah, I mean, selling comes in different forms, right? There was a lot of home-cooked meals happening during the bidding process with my family, explaining them what I was going to do. No, look, again, it goes back to having a support structure in place where people believe in you, right? I think that's really important, and not just your wife and your immediate family, but even your friends, and then also your customer base, right? Some of my most loyal customers still come by to the distillery, weekly and just share how much they believe in our brand. And it makes me feel good inside to think, wow.
That kind of charge you up.
Yeah, they believe it maybe more than I did at one point.
And you go home and tell your spouse.
And you feed off that.
You go home and tell your spouse, they love me.
That's right. That's right. Yeah.
Well, I want to shift gears because there's some important stuff going on, and I need to make sure we take advantage of Ed C. Lover of the Denver Business Journal being here. And since we've been talking about alcohol and beverages and so, there is an effort to let bars stay open later in Colorado. What's your take of that?
Absolutely. Now, what it is, it's a bill that would allow cities and local governments to determine whether or not they cut off at 2, which is now the statewide law,
right.
2 a.m. is when you shut down alcohol sales, or whether you could stay open to a later time. Generally, 4 o'clock is what's talked about. The idea is that, especially if you go into Lodo on a Friday or Saturday night and every bar lets out at 2, you're suddenly pushing people out into the street who have been drinking for hours. And as you may read in other newspapers, there are a bit of fracases going on around this by spacing that time out. Some bars won't stay open until 4.
Yeah,
there'll be a lot less
people
concentrated
too.
In one area.
Yeah.
And for many people, it is a public safety issue.
Well, I would think also that because of the surge pricing and some of the ride hailing services, that might offset a little bit of that, and people would be more inclined to go ahead and use those when they shouldn't be driving. I don't know.
It's an interesting thought, though. I think if you've already made the decision that you're going to be driving after you put down too many, I don't know that a
Maybe
later
not.
Bar time is going to help that. It might actually discourage that.
Good point. All right, I'm going to shift gears again. We're going to run through several pretty quickly here. This one's important to me, the notion of Colorado as a hub for outdoor industry businesses. And there's a couple of things going on. One, you wrote a story about incentives on the Western Slope to keep a company in Colorado. The other is this whole notion of attracting some industry shows from Utah and other places. Let's talk about both of those.
Yeah, absolutely. And it actually goes into something that's coming out in our March 10th edition about our increasing competition with Utah. Colorado was the second state in the country to introduce an office specifically for outdoor recreation to try to attract companies, to grow local companies, to take advantage of both tourism and manufacturing aspects to this. Utah was the first. And now we're getting into bidding wars with Utah over companies. In fact, there was this one, the one that you referenced, a company in Grand Junction that makes aerial adventure rides. And they were given flat out $600,000 by Utah to move out to Weber County, Utah, where Colorado doesn't have any kind of that amount of money in its pocket to try to keep them, but it's doing what it can to incent them here. I think it's a good sign that the outdoor recreation industry is growing as much as it is. It's a $4.2 billion industry in Colorado alone that more people are interested in coming in here. But I think it's going to show that there are a lot of other states that want to get in on this game too.
I would think so, and it is competitive. And I think when you think of Colorado manufacturing in outdoor industry, several products come to mind. What comes to your mind? Because you're in the business out there reporting on them. Several companies maybe we haven't heard. One comes to mind for me. Vormi is one that I'm hoping to get on the show at some point. I know there's isn't Ross Reels in Colorado. Mm-hmm. There's some great outdoor products companies. So I hope that we'll continue to have those at the forefront and we'll promote those as well. Let me ask you a question. Do you think Colorado will succeed in being the nation's hub for the outdoor industry?
I don't know that it as a singular state can be. I think you're talking to Luis Benitez, who is the state's outdoor recreation office director. Mm-hmm. He kind of views it as, we don't have to have every company here. If somebody wants a headquarter in Utah or in Washington or in Montana, but they want to open, say, a distribution center here in Colorado, mm-hmm. while their headquarters are elsewhere, we're fine with that. We can do almost a regional share of these companies. Mm-hmm. A bike company called QBP is a great example that maintains its headquarters in Utah but opened up a distribution center in mm-hmm. Denver because it wanted to be near DIA. And he said, we're happy to share that with others.
Speaking of distribution, there's some massive talks going on. I hope we make headway around road funding, transportation funding in Colorado, and the role that it has to play with our ability to succeed as a state and as a distribution hub. What's your take on that?
I think everybody hopes something comes out of it yet, but nobody's got that real key that's going to unite the Democrats and the Republicans right now. Right now, Democrats basically want to put a ballot measure before the people in November saying, will you increase taxes, likely a sales tax increase to pay for roads? Republicans are saying, we're okay with the idea of putting a tax increase there, but we want to make sure that we either cut the budget or cut other taxes to show that the state has skin in the game, too, if we're asking people to put more money in. And right now, that's the area they can't find common ground on. They can't figure out where those cuts in the budget or where those cuts in other taxes are going to come from.
Well, I think from my perspective, this host's perspective is that we've got to come up with more money for roads. And almost everyone agrees with that. And in Colorado, of course, the legislature can't just vote to do that. We have to have a vote of the people. And so I'm hopeful that the legislators will propose something. If not, I think we'll see something on the ballot anyway, don't you?
Well, I think it's going to be a lot easier to get it coming from the legislature to get it on the ballot. And then you're also going to have that coalition building process in just getting it onto the ballot. So that'll be a big help in passing it.
Well, let's hope that we do. And let's hope that voters vote for it, because I think clearly for Colorado to continue to thrive, we need to fund transportation. And with that, I'm going to thank my guests from today, Ed Seelever of the Denver Business Journal, Paul Laurie of Smithsonian Student Adventures and Walking Tree Travel, also Silver Spork Social, and Sean Smiley of State 38 Distillery. This show is going to be available via podcast at proco360.com. I want to let you know, next week, CEO Mark Butler of J.R. Butler, a company that engineers, builds, and installs glass windows and doors, is going to be joining me. This is really a story about management and leadership development. J.R. Butler's elite team was founded to combat a leadership gap in our society. Others are part there, and so they're part. They've also got this group called the Veritas Program that empowers people to create leaders around them, their own employees. And from my take, Next week's interview is about a bold and gutsy Colorado company with the courage to develop leaders in a world in which free gourmet lunches and bring your dog to work is often what gets attention. So join me at ProCo360.com and on 710 KNUS. Thanks for joining me today. Have a great day.